and their leaders. You've probably all heard that the best-selling book of all time is the Bible. What you might not know is that the second best-selling book of all time, at least until fairly recently, was a book called Pilgrim's Progress by John Bunyan. John Bunyan spent a long time in prison in England, believe it or not. Those days, things maybe were a little bit different, and who knows, maybe going back. But he spent time in prison because of his faith. He was a Puritan. The book Pilgrim's Progress tells the story of a man named Christian. That wasn't his name at the beginning, but that's the name he takes on in this story. And he goes from adventure to adventure, but he's got this huge bundle on his back, a heavy burden that just weighs him down. And as he goes from adventure to adventure on his way to Jerusalem, and just before he gets to the Jordan River so he can cross into the new city, he loses his bundle because he sees the cross. And the bundle just rolls away into the valley, never to be seen again. If you want an idea what that looks like, I'm sure everybody here watches television, and you see these ads from the Alberta government for people who are burdened by debt. And the guy walks around in different scenes, and he's got this big bundle on his shoulder trying to help his kid play soccer, trying to get into the game, and it just doesn't work. Until suddenly he goes to a credit counselor, and the burden falls away. Well, Pilgrim's Progress, the credit counselor is Jesus Christ on the cross. Hebrews suggests that sin is something like that. In fact, that's what Pilgrim's Progress is based on, I think. Something that wraps around you, prevents you from living your life as you would, and from playing the game with your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And I want you to keep that image in mind about our text this morning, because Jesus is the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. We find that expression not only in Hebrews 12, but in the passage we read from Hebrews 2. The pioneer and perfecter of our faith. And Jesus is the pioneer who's made perfect through his suffering. Keep that image of Christ who endures the cross for our sake as we shift gears. Because this text is a text with a lot of images in it. And we're going to look at another image for a moment. I told Suzanne that I was going to take Ron's name in vain. I don't know if you all know Ron Noel, but sometimes he plays the piano or organ. And Ron used to work for the Drillers. And as such, he had access to Colosseum. I can never remember what name it's was being called by. To me, it's the Coliseum, where Oilers played hockey up until this year. And Ron arranged a soccer game between, not the Drillers, but the Oilers. A soccer game between the Oilers and a bunch of girls, among whom was my daughter, because she was 20 years younger then than she is now. And the girls were pretty good. They were much better than the Oilers. The Oilers didn't know a thing about soccer. And they actually were on their way to winning that game until, unfortunately, one Oiler who happened to know a lot about soccer, George Larocque. You probably don't know the name George Larocque, but the older people here do. They remember him. He was a big guy and a very friendly guy. And all the girls surrounded him afterwards. He was a tremendous soccer player. He had a choice between playing professional hockey or professional soccer. And he won the game for the Oilers. But now let's shift again. Can you imagine playing hockey with the Oilers? Not soccer, but hockey. And not only with Connor McDavid, but with Wayne Gretzky and Mark Messier and Glenn Anderson and Yari Curry and all those other guys. And with not just with Oilers, but with other big heroes like Tim Horton, He didn't just make donuts. He was a really good defenseman for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And I don't even know if he made his own donuts, but Tim Horton and Bobby Orr, Gordie Howe, Jean Béliveau, Rocket Richard, Teeter Kennedy. I'm telling my age now. I was a Maple Leaf fan in those days. Now, you may have only the hockey cards for these guys, but the text gives us an image as if they're actually on the ice with us, helping us play, showing us all the right moves, telling us what it takes to play the game properly. Can you imagine that, being on the ice with all these guys who played hockey? And so not watching from the stands, that's sometimes the way we think of it, as if they're all cheering us on, but they're actually down there with us in the game, playing with us, surrounded by a great crowd of witnesses. Now, there's a few differences, of course, between sports and the cloud of witnesses in Hebrews. These stars that the author of Hebrews has in mind are not sports heroes, but all of those people who are mentioned in chapter 11, the chapter just before our text. Abel, Noah, Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Jacob, Moses, David, and a pile of others. And when it comes down to it, they're not really heroes and stars in the same sense that we think of heroes and stars. Some of them made a big splash, like Noah. Excuse the pun. I couldn't resist that one. But others might be a bit like losers to us. Abel, for instance, was killed by his brother. Moses, who had a chance at being stinking rich and a powerful guy in Egypt, gave it up to help his people. And for a long time, he had a job that really wasn't a very nice job. But all of them had one thing in common. They were influenced by their faith in God. In fact, they were gripped by it. It determined everything they did in their whole life. They were drawn completely into the game. They were all looking forward to the time when God would bring their lives to the point that God's goodness and purposes would be so evident that the life that we are living would pale by comparison. And that chapter 11 ends this way. These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what was promised, since God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. Only together with us. They all knew that they had some growing to do, and that they could keep on growing forever almost. No matter how good or how bad they had it at the moment, they knew that there was more coming and that it was going to change the world that they were living in. They also knew that they were going to be playing the game together with us. We belong together with them, with Abraham and David and Moses. And that was so important, they were willing to stake their lives on it, and some of them did lose their lives. They had a vision of God finishing his work, making all things right, no more suffering, no more bullying, no more competition where we're always playing one-upmanship, no more falling flat on your face. That was what they lived for, and that determined what they knew they had to do. At the same time, they knew they weren't quite there yet, but they believed. And they counted on God, even if they had to go through a lot of effort, pain, and struggle to get there. Well, if you're into playing hockey, you know you have to try hard. See, not much they had in common with some of the hockey players. They had to discipline themselves, make sacrifices to get to be good players. And that's true of any sport. It may be a reason why the author uses this image, even though he doesn't really want to talk about sports, but he wants to talk about our pilgrimage to God, like Pilgrim's Progress. And there's another difference, especially if we think of hockey. And, you know, the translations all tell us that we're running a race, but it really is much more like we're striving in a contest. And so it could be hockey, except they didn't play hockey in those days. But it could be basketball or soccer or whatever else people might play. But Hebrews talks about taking off everything until the body is as streamlined as it can be, and that nothing prevents us from being as efficient a player as possible. And now that's more suited to, say, a game like basketball, or to a race like cycling. Cyclists, for instance, wear these really stretchy clothes that are so tight that there's almost no air resistance at all. And it compares our stripping down to getting rid of sin. And by that he means not just stop doing bad things or wrong things. He means that we have to get rid of anything that prevents us from making the kind of decisions that help us to get to the next stage of our relationship with God. Get rid of anything that hides us from God and prevents us from seeing God and loving him and being recognized that we are loved by God. Hockey can probably help us here in one way, of course, getting rid of that burden. I mean, hockey players keep on putting more and more equipment on to protect us because they just assume the other guy is evil. He's out to get him. And so we need to protect ourselves. It's a rough game. Well, the players in chapter 11 did exactly the opposite. They made themselves vulnerable in order to witness to their trust to God, that God would be with them and that God will fulfill their purposes to bring us and his creation to where he wanted it to be and to bring us into a beautiful relationship with him. And that's why that image of Christian in Pilgrim's Progress is so important for us. We're on a journey towards new life. In fact, if we read the Bible carefully, we already know that we have that new life. We already are children of God. You confessed that this morning too. We already have a relationship with God in faith, but we're not quite there yet where we have to be. We all have some growing to do. I don't care whether you're a cadet or whether you're one of the people who are in the 90s here in this congregation. We all keep on growing. We all need to move on from where we are. And the emphasis here is actually on struggling in this pilgrimage. And we could actually translate it just to strive in the struggle. It's in that sense, it's not a game. It's being realistic that the Christian life is part of a journey. There's growth. There's also opposition. There's learning and there's anticipation. There's a goal that we keep in mind, because that's what keeps us growing. We're moving towards something. And that goal, and that's the amazing thing about our Christian faith, that goal is not just something out there, it's a goal that walks with us in the Spirit of Jesus Christ. He keeps us company, because that goal is the rule of God embodied in the life of Jesus, and Jesus has taken us with him. So this isn't just something pious that people say. It's actually a way of living, and that's what you wanted to confess today in your litany. A way of living and serving, a way of making choices, developing sight and insight into what is happening around us and what needs to happen. How we represent God's vision for people and for our lives. And so for us, the question can be, well, what kind of burdens are we bearing? What is that baggage that clings to us and that we don't really want to leave behind? What are the comforts that distract us from seeing what we are really all about? What are the things that are so dear to us, but they really prevent us from being fully human? What holds us back from proceeding further along the path of faith as a child of God? What so enwraps our existence that we would rather identify with that than our calling? And the answers, of course, for that will be different for each of us. It can be different for your cadets and different for your grandparents. So, and I suppose you could always say, are you entitled to the good things of life? I was just wondering what kind of shoes you're wearing. I know when my son was in grade school, and we bought him shoes, good shoes from Zellers. No way. Nikes or Adidas, you got to have them. And last week Saturday, I don't know if you guys read comics, that's after the Bible, that's the thing I read most. The comics. And last week Saturday in the comics, there's one strip called Baby Blues with the girl's name is Zoe. We used to have a dog named Zoe too, but it's no comparison. And Zoe complains, I've outgrown my shoes. And her mother thinks, how's that possible? I just bought them 2 weeks ago. And so she takes the shoes and she checks them out and discovers that the shoes fit perfectly. And then Zoe looks at her mother and says, yeah, but I've outgrown them fashion-wise. I've outgrown them fashion-wise. And so, okay, this is what some of the kinds of things that, you know, when we begin to think, where do we put our important things? And we have to distinguish between what is an expression of life and what defines it. What is the most important thing for us? There's another thing that the text that you chose from Hebrews tells us. It's not necessarily the case that we won't ever get to be where we have to be, and that it's completely impossible to come to the point where we meet God. The Bible would never tell us that. In fact, the whole point is that someone has already made that journey and has gone to the goal, has done what none of the people mentioned in chapter 11 could complete. And of course, I should ask you, but the answer is Jesus, who's called the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. The old translations used a wonderful word that would fit in with the sports image, our captain. Our captain. But look at what Jesus had to do to take on that role, to go ahead of us and to show the way, and to be the one to help us make that journey. It's a journey of suffering. Even more than an athlete suffers to make himself the perfect competitor. Hear the words that are spoken here. Who for the sake of the joy that was set before him endured the cross and disregarded shame. Now sometimes when we talk about the cross, we can get lay real heavy because sometimes it's hard to imagine. We don't see crosses in our life every day, and we talk about them a lot. But shame, we understand that. We don't want to be ashamed with our friends. We don't want to lose face. And Jesus was willing to lose face. And of course, the cross was the biggest way of losing face for our sake. Putting himself on the line. And the life of Jesus exposes our journey that as one that is definitely not a straight line. Things are sometimes easy and sometimes rough. Our lives are filled with temptation and with opposition, filled with paths that suggest that life could be more comfortable, things that help us to get along with others because that's the easy way, even if it's not always the right way. It's filled with obstructions to serving God and being faithful to what kind of person we should be and to what kind of things we might consider doing to help others. It's filled with shortcuts to our own success and to our own happiness, whether or not it is at the expense of others. I think of somebody in politics in a country just south of us. It's filled with resistance to God and to putting ourselves on the line for the sake of God and the right things to do. We're dealing here with something. I have too many things in my ears. I wear hearing aids too, and hearing aids, glasses, and I think I got it now. We're dealing here with something that seems attractive to us, something that could be an advantage for us in the world. But what our text is telling us is that suffering and resistance and difficulties in fulfilling our calling are inevitable. They're inevitable. Now, that's something that we haven't experienced a lot here, but think of the people in Syria, for instance. And the moment we make a choice for God, and the moment that we are living for Jesus, the moment that we let those choices determine our personal choices, we will be under pressure to conform to another loyalty, to what our friends and what the world around us says, oh no, this is what you really ought to be doing. This is what's really important for you. And we may not know this experience all that well in Canada yet, but increasingly you will find that calling yourself a Christian will raise hackles somewhere. We are asked to do more than call ourselves Christians. We are asked to shape our lifestyle, our priorities, to things that we regard as most important are we called to be shaped by faith and trust in God who came to us in Jesus. And you're not going to become good in any sport unless you take care of yourself, unless you practice. And that takes discipline and maybe even painful discipline. I know when I played hockey, after not playing for a while, the muscles were sore for a week. And you're not going to do well in school unless you take your studies seriously, unless you really believe that what you're learning is worthwhile for what still lies ahead of you. Even the stuff that you can't use right now helps to discipline your thinking and shape how you deal with problems. You're not going to do well in music, even if you love it, unless you practice diligently and learn some basics about what music is all about. And we can go on. Say similar things about so many other ways, areas of our experience. But the Hebrews tells us that the most basic element in which we have to practice and be willing to suffer in our lives is faith in God and in Jesus. And an openness to the Spirit of God dwelling in us and leading the way. And that helps us deal with our life. And sooner or later, it will help us to deal with our world, our society, with pain, sickness, injustice, oppression, and the coming of together of people from different backgrounds. It gives you the courage to play the game, whatever the game is. This is the basic game. And our captain, our leader helping us is not McJesus, but Jesus himself. He's been there. He knows the game that's more than a game. And now he's playing it with us, with discipline and pain, hope, joy, glory, and all. It's bigger even than the Stanley Cup or the Super Bowl. Amen.